Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, the new home.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
I will make no such promises.
The morning is evil.
We shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I've been dying to ask you, what happened to Zuko's mom?
I can't wait to get started.
Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar the Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongguFang.net. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by mini-host Delaney.
Hello.
Haley.
Hi.
Philip.
What's up?
And co-host Mel.
Hey.
Hey, you replied on time.
Okay. Hey!
This is a mini-cast where we discuss single Avatar core topic review for a time. Today we'll be discussing how to fix Mako.
And let's thank Spider for
yes,
this.
Yes, thank you Spider-Lynn on the forums for this topic. It's one of the best topic ideas I think we've done. Basically, what we're going to do is we're going to discuss why Mako sucks and how to fix it. I think this is a good timing in preparation for season 2. Not that what we're going to say has any influence, because they're already writing season 4, so, you know, we'll see what path they've went down, eventually. But we can try. I guess what I want to start here is, what is everyone's opinions of Mako? Do you think he's likable? Do you like him? Do you think he's a good person? Do you think he's a good character? And let's start with Delaney.
Well, okay, well, currently I do not like Mako. In the beginning, he was alright. It just toward the end, when all that stuff happened, it was like, oh my god, Mako. I mean, he's a good person. I wouldn't say he's evil or like, I mean, he's not like Ozai or anything. Mako as a character, I want to fix Mako not because he's it's different from like disliking a character. I feel like he needs to be fixed because he hurts the show. Because he's being presented as good when he's not doing good things.
Okay.
Yeah. I rambled a bit, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you got
there at the end, okay. Haley, what are your opinions of Mako?
He's like one of my favorite characters. It's not like he exactly is a good person, but I just like the character for some reason that I can't describe. He has like major flaws that need to be fixed, but I don't know. I like him a lot.
Do you think he hurts the show? Do you think he's a good character?
No.
You don't think he hurts the show?
I don't think he hurts the show, and I think he is a good character on some accounts. It depends what he's doing.
Okay. I think I know your reason for liking Mako. I think it's his brooding. He's the brooding hot guy at the show. I think that's probably why.
Okay, that's only like a plus.
It's
not just that's not the only reason. I mean, he is really hot, but whatever.
I definitely wanted to have Haley on this one to express a dissenting opinion. So we will get into this. Philip, what are your opinions?
I mean, I agree with Delaney that he started off as a good character. He had, like, that protective older brother aspect. You know, he was looking out for Bolin and doing a good job of it. But then later on, he just kind of turned into a jerk with what he did to, like, all of the girls on the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think he necessarily hurts the show because he does, you know, provide an important element to the show. But at the same time, that doesn't make him a good person or even a particularly likable person.
Okay. Let's try Mel.
Yeah. I think I agree with Philip in that, like, I wasn't the biggest fan of him even when he appeared, just because I'm not a fan of the brooding guy in the corner. Like, that weird, just sort of, like, angsty, quiet, good-looking guy, because I just am not a fan of that. Sorry, Haley. But, yeah, I mean, like, you know, he's not a crappy person by himself. What's the word I'm looking for? He's not inherently a crappy person. I mean, he took care of his brother. He did all that stuff. It's just with this whole deal, like, he obviously does not know how to handle situation, like, social situations or situations with girls. Like, And I don't know, I'm not articulating myself well, but I'm just, that's what made me dislike him, was the way he handled Asami and Korra. Like, he was just really crappy to both of them, and blamed kind of Korra for things that were essentially his fault.
He's socially impaired.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually think that's a really good point. I didn't think we'd get into that until later, but it's, Mako's very close to being sympathetic in that he is socially,
We talked about immature in like immature, the other casts.
Yeah, immature.
Like in the episode cast, like you talked about all the time. Oh my god, he's so immature.
Yeah, but like, and it's something I think many of us can relate to, like especially me, you know, being socially awkward. And he that should make him sympathetic, but not the way the show handles it. Yeah, so I guess I have an inherent bias against Mako because he's the brooding male pretty boy character of the show.
Like, Mel, like Zuko, like I don't Mel was talking about.
Yeah, so if you listen to the old episode discussion podcast for Avatar, I'm not the biggest fan of Zuko.
You're just jealous.
Jealous, yes.
That's what it was.
I kind of hate this archetype because it's just so unrelatable for me. I don't know.
Well, he's like Zuko, but with less redeeming qualities, and we haven't seen him turn better at this point.
Yeah. I mean, the difference is he's like a quote-unquote good guy, but Zuko in season one is more sympathetic than Mako, apparently, and that's a big problem.
Yeah.
I mean,
because he was the villain.
Avatar was very good with making their villain sympathetic, but, like, example Zhao, but still, like, you know, it's frustrating.
I think what's bothersome is that Mako thinks what he's doing is the right thing, whereas you could tell Zuko, you know, it was obvious that Zuko's actions were supposed to look a certain way, and the majority of the audience agreed with the way that looked, but Mako thinks he's, like, you know, not in the wrong here, and everyone's like, no, you're being an idiot.
That's why we're having a Fix Mako cast and not a Fix Any Other Character cast, because Mako is like, we don't understand, this needs to change.
We should fix Korra too, but that's not...
Well, she just needs some characterization to begin with and kind of a backbone, but she's also socially inept, because she grew up in a compound.
She grew up in a ice island in the bottom of the...
I think what's really interesting is that the show actually does show you take two socially inept people and you put them in a relationship.
And they cause chaos everywhere.
It's not going to be super cute. It's going to hurt other people. That's what it's going to do. Like, it's true. I think it's maybe realistic, but I don't think...
This is like watching a Michael Cera movie.
Yes.
Without the comedy and stuff. Yeah, Mike and Brian didn't... I'm so convinced that they're not aware that this is happening.
They can't.
Yeah, but okay.
Because Mako just goes around hurting everybody.
I think an important point to make with Mako is that he doesn't inherently do anything wrong until it involves Asami. And,
this is true.
And the reason it becomes so frustrating is because it makes Korra kind of like Korra should be a feminist show, and it makes it kind of terrible towards women.
I think he did something wrong before Asami. Like, stealing your brother's girlfriend is kinda not cool.
When do you mean?
When she was gonna go out with Bolin, but then she went out with Mako instead.
Oh,
Korra never really showed some, like, I don't know, it got confusing. Also, it's bad because they show us the example of Tenzin, Lin, and Pema, and then Korra still does this.
That's interesting, the way they do that. It's very bluntly, we don't see anything inside the heads. You can't really make a judgment on that situation.
Well, I just think I like how they, like, we have these, I mean, the situations are very similar from the, because we don't know a lot, but they seem pretty similar. Yet, and of course we are getting all this from Jenora, and they're like, happy fun time volcano, whatever, and the unicorns, but...
What?
The icky story, remember? She's like, oh, yeah, and they all die. I mean, that's really what it was. So I just think it's funny that, I mean, and then Korra does make it a joke. Tenzin's the heartbreaker, but we do have this, I mean, Lin's clearly not happy. Pema and Tenzin are kind of happy, and then we have, I just think it's interesting that they still went, that Korra, despite all this, is like, oh, I'm still going to do this.
I guess the biggest problems with Mako, for me personally, are the fact that this show is treating women badly as, you know, like, acceptable. I don't know if it's acceptable. See, the thing with any moral transgressions on the show are, you're allowed to depict moral transgressions in television, but you should be aware that you're doing it.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's my big thing, is that cheating. I'm like, cheating is not okay at all, ever. No, don't do it.
So you have... That. Yeah, so that's number one. Number two is that he's unlikable in a show with very few unlikable characters. I think that's also a problem. There's very few likable characters. There's a lot of characters that are, like, whatever. Like, Korra is whatever. And...
Yeah.
You know, Bolin's likable, but he's barely on the air. Really, I mean, it's as we've been over, Asami's like one of the only good characters on the show.
Well, it's like they have this great characterization for Asami, and they're like, let's just do the exact opposite with Mako.
Yeah, basically, this all boils down to the fact that they're focusing on plot more than character.
Yes, which is fine because they were only going to have 13 episodes, and they were like, this is all we're going to do.
But now it's interesting because we get...
They have three seasons to try and salvage that.
Yeah, now
it's
like, how are you going to fix this? Because he needs to be fixed.
Yeah, because you could start focusing on character, but how's it going to work with our preconceived notions? Anyway, I've talked about this about 1,000 times, but let's talk about the fact that characters don't need to be likable.
Yes.
And the reason I say this 1,000 times is because I don't think this is necessarily widely accepted. Tons of shows portray unlikable characters... But they're not aired on air. Is the problem? I mean, I guess like on Dan Schneider shows, there's characters that you're not supposed to take seriously, and characters who you don't particularly like. Like on Victoria's Tori's sister, I guess. But that's also for comedy.
Trina.
Yeah, Trina. And it's interesting because Sam is also a good example to think about with this from iCarly and now Sam and Cat. Is because she's kind of a bad person, but she's sympathetic because, you know, we see her side of things and...
also, all the bad things she does are really funny.
Yeah, yes. So and another thing is that it's a comedy, but it's interesting because you can make a character who does bad things likable. But Mako is almost the opposite of that, in that he does one bad thing, but he generally does okay things, and yet he's still completely unlikable because he really shows no emotions and you don't see anything... sympathetic from him whatsoever.
Well, kind of what me and Haley kind of got into a mini argument the other day about, I'm fine not liking Mako. I don't have to like him. But it's gotten to the point, though, where, like, I feel like, I mean, it's not like hurting the show, but it's bad that they're presenting him like he's a good guy and he's doing all these terrible things. Like, that's what's bothersome.
Like Dylan said, Like Dylan said, he's not doing several, like, bad things. He's a generally good person. He just did one really bad thing to people. So, I mean...
But they're completely ignoring it, which that's really why I feel like the whole purpose of this podcast is that he did, like, we just need to tweak Mako a little bit. Because if you fix a character's, all of his a character's flaws, they're no longer that character, and then you don't like them anymore anyway.
Mel? No? Okay.
I
think it's just because Mako's on the good guy team doesn't give him a free pass.
Thank you, Philip.
We cannot say that word.
Why not?
What?
No.
Why not?
Because it's a bad word.
They use that on Nickelodeon shows, don't they?
I don't know. They definitely do not. They use it on broadcast television, which surprises me, but not on Nickelodeon shows. I think it should be noted, and I think me and we discussed this in chat one day. If someone does one bad thing, it doesn't make them like a bad person, and they can be forgiven for this. Like
this
Mako.
Is true.
And also, Korra is not a bad person for dating Mako, and Mako is not a bad person for dating Korra.
Just like Pima and Tenzin got married, and even though, well, I mean, that's fine. I mean, they can do whatever they want. They're characters.
Basically, people can do what they want. Is the
yes.
general. That being said, we're about to criticize Mako for moral transgressions, which is inherently judging someone's actions. So I guess that's a little bit of a...
People can do what they want unless we don't like it.
Exactly.
It's what we're saying.
But the big thing is, though, is that they're presenting him as a great, good character, and then he just... And it's just worse because they're just acting like it's not bad, like
so
what he did.
The big problem...
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Talk. What was
so, okay, I missed the part where you talked about likable characters, and I agree with Dylan that characters don't have to be inherently likable, but when you say, like Delaney, you just said about him being a great or good character, did you mean, I guess
I meant like he's good aligned, like RPG. He's a
good, okay, so he's a
he's
good
aligned
guy,
good. He's not okay. a good character because Asami's yes. a good character. Mako yeah, has not good.
Is, I guess like I'd rather be having this reaction where I want to punch him than not really
yes.
give a crap about him at all.
Like Bowen.
So, but yeah, I'm just throwing this in because I missed that conversation opinion. While I was in crappy internet land.
Yeah, that's
limbo.
I think in general, I agree with Mel that I'd rather hate a character than not care about him. But I think in this
yes.
case, a good comparison is Korra versus Mako. Korra, I don't
yeah.
care about. But I'd rather have Korra than Mako because Mako's actions so thoroughly were focused on within the second half of the show and within the finale. It there's other things in the finale that ruin the finale, but that almost, it just takes you so out of it.
Yeah.
That there's this huge, this big romantic moment between the two, and not only do you not care, you dislike it. You don't want this happening.
Which is why we want Mako slightly to, we want moments of redemption from Mako so that we start to kind of almost like Makora.
You will like it.
This is a new thing with me, just not liking the show's main
yeah,
pairing. It's very frustrating.
I'm echoing, I think, maybe.
Don't worry.
Nope.
Don't worry.
Okay.
Haley, chime in on all this, because I know you have different opinions.
About which part?
Well, how did you feel at the end with the Makora kiss?
Oh, okay. At the time when I was watching it, I was really happy about it because that's my OTP for the show. I like Makora. It's my favorite ship. But after I got to thinking about it, and it's kind of sad about how Mako and Korra actually did end up together, because Mako breaks Asami's heart. Korra and Asami are kind of sort of friends, but now it's kind of rocky because Mako and Korra are going to be together. So it's just a big mess, and that kind of that takes away from your enjoyment of the ship.
Yeah.
I still want to talk about that moment where I really thought Korra was going to like be like, no, Mako, and runs away, and then it's like 2 minutes later, and I'm like, darn it, so much disappointment.
Yeah, it's like, they obviously didn't mean it that way, but it's like that's what that was.
Like, so close. I was like, oh my god, Korra's gonna get some character. And then it was like,
yeah.
no. And I was like, darn it.
Haha, just kidding. That's not happening.
That's exactly what happened.
Okay. We're gonna start getting the actual fixing of Mako now. I actually think the number one way you fix Mako is by making other characters relevant, which I think is something that will inherently happen in the next season. Because I think a big reason why Mako is such a problem is because there's only really three characters in the show that mattered at the end. Korra, Asami, and Mako. Like, no one else is even... I guess Aman, kind of, but it not really... Like, the only characters you care about, the only ones you're supposed to feel things for, are these three. And these are the three, one of them is hurting the other two, and that's what makes Mako so terrible. So you have to make Bolin more of a character. You have to... give Korra some qualities. You have to... Not that... Korra has, like, character traits, but they're very stereotypical and not expanded upon. That's
well, she's just kind of there. Like, she makes comments, she's like, oh, I'm the big tough girl, but, like, we don't get anything, like, with Aang. There was so much depth to Aang.
It's like she's... That's her one defining character trait, is that she's a tough guy, and that's what they left it at.
It's like, we had that with Toph, but she... But it was
I don't think
like,
anyone heard me.
No, we heard that.
No, we
heard you.
Surprising. Yeah.
Making progress.
Yeah.
You heard me? Okay, because I couldn't hear you.
So
we can hear you.
I said that's the number one thing to fix with Mako. I guess that's not true, because the number one thing you have to fix with Mako is make him not be terrible to Asami anymore.
That would be helpful.
I think even just having consequences to him, like seeing him realize what he's done, would be a good start.
What's so interesting is that the world is kind of like, is what is portrayed in Korra. We're kind of criticizing Korra for being realistic in that.
Yeah.
There's not, the people like Mako don't have consequences. Like, that, it just happens. But it doesn't work storytelling-wise. And it's also not what they intended. I mean, maybe it is, but no.
Can I also say, I find it kind of problematic that we're supposed to be rooting for Mako to break up with Asami so that he can be with Korra, and I think that's horrible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, we're rooting for Korra, and then Korra, like... And then it's like, you're breaking up this couple that's already together.
I like Asami better than Korra.
Me too, because Korra doesn't have a character. She's just there.
Asami went through so much crap, I mean...
Which is why I think she deserves
on the other hand,
my own characterization.
I don't think Asami should be with Mako if Mako doesn't want to be with her, because that's just a waste of her time.
No, I'm not saying Asami should be with him or anything. I'm just saying the way that they portrayed it was that, like, oh my gosh, when are, you know, like, you're thinking, sitting here thinking, oh, when's Mako and Asami going to break up so they can get together? And, you know, in the situation, yeah, I'd rather her not be with Mako, but, you know, inherently, if you're looking at any relationship, established relationship, and you're saying, oh, I want these two people to break up so that this person, like, it's just, it's not something that I enjoy having.
Well, they just need to show that, like, Mako needs to have that moment where he's like, what I did was wrong, and I owe Asami, like he needs
he
to not
everyone
be-
an apology.
Yes, everyone. Because of all this torment he caused for everyone. And Bolin, because he was like, oh, I'm just going to forget your feelings about Korra.
Yeah, I do think we need Mako being sorry in some form. I don't know if they should spend too much time on trying to fix.
Or even him being intentionally unapologetic. Just him realizing he's screwed up in some way.
It'd be nice to have like an episode where he gets his butt kicked and he gets humble.
Yeah.
Like, if another character would have pointed out what he was doing was wrong, and even what Korra was occasionally doing was wrong and stupid, then I would feel a lot better about this. But no one policed that, and it's supposed to be portrayed in a good light.
Back to something else a little bit ago. Rather than in the finale rooting for the two main characters to get together, I was rooting for Mako to break up with Asami so we could finally be done with this. Like, and that's a major problem.
Because he kept stringing her along.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they think that. I think what Mike and Brian did was they thought that scene in the kitchen was them trying to break them up. Was them breaking them up without actually saying it, because, you know, they're doing a more in-depth show now. They don't have to spell things out. But that's not how, like, real life works. Like, you can't just do that. It needs to be clear, and it needs to be, you know... I mean, the way it's portrayed is if they broke up, something had to have been showed off screen. And...
I mean, I think there are definitely situations where relationships can end implicitly rather than explicitly, but I don't know if this is necessarily one of them.
Well, this reminds me of, and though I love this scene, it's my favorite scene of all time, but when Aang and Katara kiss at the end of season 3, we understand they're together now, yay, but we don't have that moment afterwards, like how Katara rejected Aang in Briar Island Players, which we understand why she did it, but we don't have that actual moment of, like, I feel like they just like doing these things where they're like, oh, you understand what's going on here, but we're not really going to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, because I honestly feel like they handled Katang kind of crappy at the end too, but there needs to be a moment where that, even if it's just in passing, where they address the fact that Mako was acting like a jerk.
Yes.
Agreed. So I think that the Amber Island Players is a good comparison to how Mike and Brian are incapable of writing these romances correctly.
Despite how much we love Katang.
Yes.
Like, it kind of, yeah.
There's two major problems with Ember Island Players into the finale thing. One, it's not clear what they're talking about in Ember Island Players. Like, the way I interpret the scene is Katara's like, we can't do this right now, we need to win the war and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's not actually what they say.
Like, it honestly came across like, oh, she wasn't, like, so, like, that scene where he, you know, Azuka's coronation, where she has that moment where she looks up at him, it comes across like, oh, he's the hero avatar now. Now we can be together. And I know that's not what they intended, but it was not.
Because they don't say anything.
It comes across you were just, it's like, oh, now I'm required to be with the hero. Yeah, it's some, again, anti-feminist thing that it comes across as, but it's like, it's less bad because they've been working up toward it, and they did so many good things before it.
And I would like to point out, it was nice that at the end, Katara initiated where Aang hadn't initiated everything before.
Oh, yeah.
So that kind of almost, I mean, they didn't, I mean, we were just waiting so long for it to happen. We were just like, we'll take whatever we can get. But
see, I completely disagree with all of you. I think it was just, you know, oh, we're done with all this now. Okay, we have time to actually focus on relationships.
Well, it was a fast wrap-up for Katang, and it kind of suffered for it, I think, is the problem.
Yeah, so I think that's what I want it to be. Like, that I don't think that's what the scene says, though. Like, I've watched that scene many times. It, like, I don't know what it says, but it doesn't inherently say that.
Maybe, well, I just was saying, like, I love Katang, I love it, I have no problem with this scene, but, like, it just, because I see all this stuff I want in it, but we don't actually get that.
like, it's hard to separate me reading fanfiction from that, because I'm putting the fanfiction onto that scene, because nothing is actually said. So the, back to finishing my thoughts. The second problem with the Kang in the finale is that one is that scene they don't explicitly say stuff, and then they don't explicitly resolve it. They don't spend any time on it, and it's just resolved by showing them being together, which I think is similar to Korra in that they are relying on things being implied.
I don't think they're even aware in a lot of times what they're also implying, into addition what they're trying to imply.
Well, I think the difference with Korra is that they're implying bad things in Korra. I guess they're on it, like we talked about, like the whole Katara. One way you can interpret the Katara look thing in the coronation is that, oh, he's the hero, I'm going to be with him now. But I don't think that's necessarily the main way to interpret that scene, because there's three seasons of stuff before that. Whereas in Korra, the main way to interpret the implied thing with Mako and Asami is that Mako's just a big jerk. That is the natural way to interpret that.
He doesn't even feel the need to be like, we're breaking up, I'm going to date Korra. He's just like, oh, you're seeing what's happening, I don't really feel the need to talk to you about it.
There's too many implications rather than coming out and actually saying things for the how many complex relationships there are. You can't imply every single thing when there's that much going on. You have to be obvious about some of it, at least.
It's also a kid's show. Why are we being all subtle?
Yeah. I think a lot of this comes down to the fact that for some reason, Mike and Brian writing together, their writing style often is like this. And I say them writing together. Mike wrote some individual episodes in Avatar, which were not the same writing style as the season 3 finale and all of Korra. He wrote Blind Bandit, which is very good at talking things out, a lot of story. But then when they don't have writers and they just do the finale alone, and they just do Korra alone, we see their writing flaws come up, and they just, not that they don't write well, they don't write enough, I guess, is kind of the problem sometimes. There's just not enough there, which is interesting because Korra was so packed with material.
And we're also dealing with people who are like, I have all this story in my head, I know all these things, and I'm going to write about it. It's like when you start writing a book, you have to remember. When you're reading a book, you're like, oh, I've already read the first 3 books in this series, why do they keep repeating this stuff to me? It's because they're doing it so you don't forget, because they write the book and they have to remember to tell you things.
Yeah, that happened a lot in Harry Potter, actually. You would open things and characters would have mini introductions real quick, just in case you forgot.
Yeah, because with a lot of things, it's not, they weren't intended to be read one after the other, there's publishing time in between.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm talking about, Mike and Brian, they seem to, kind of forget, oh, we're so excited, we've got to write this, we know all this stuff that's happening, and then it's they just kind of forget to remind us of things.
They rely on the, tell us things. They rely on the previously on Avatar playing.
Okay, I think here's a good way to approach this topic now, because we're kind of oh, here's why Mako sucks, but let's get back to the real topic. We're going to go from the perspective of Tim Hedrick and Josh Hamilton. Mike and Brian called them up after book one and said, "We've come on and help write book two and on. They read over, Korra's not done yet, they read over the scripts for book one. They come back. Do they realize Mako's bad, and how do they go about writing? Because they're writing in addition to Mike and Brian, but they're significant influences in the story now. How do they approach Mako, not having been on for book one? How do they fix his character? I don't know. Do they say, okay, first we need to make him make up for all this bad stuff? No, I think they're going to try to go with the flow. Yeah, go ahead.
Trying to think of what I'm saying. But in terms of fixing, I think it relies on having someone, or in some way, get him to realize it won't happen, but get him to realize what he did wrong. I mean, the way to fix it is growth that just wasn't there. Which, now that they have, two or three more, I don't know how they're breaking up seasons with their weird book season thing, but they've got a lot more time to throw in growth here for these characters that, I'm inclined to forgive them a little bit because they only thought they had 10 or 13 episodes. But, I mean, it's something that's going to have to be dealt with Asami and Korra and Mako, which probably won't be. but I feel like it's a plot that should be looked at in future episodes and just pointed out, like, what went wrong.
Well, especially with the time jump. Like, how were they... Yeah. They can't address that right away because it's, what, like a 6-month time jump? It'd be kind of late for them to address that much later. To say, oh yeah, remember that thing that happened?
Then we can have growth. I mean, if it's immediate, that's not exactly growth. Mako has to come to this realization, or someone needs to just punch him in the face and tell him.
I mean, we already know from the Comic-Cons, was it Comic-Con? From whatever stuff got released with the scene with Asami in the airplane, like, she's, like, having problems with something. She was sad about something. Wasn't she? She was sad. There was an airplane. She was not happy.
I need a refresh.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
She was worried about something to do with the company or something like that. But, like, you know, that's there you go. Like, we got stuff to talk about there, you know?
The biggest problem, I think, for coming up is that they're starting off with Korra and Mako in a completely separate continent from Bullen and Asami.
I forgot about that.
So from the start, you can't.
And Mako cartwheeling in and out of scenes.
Yeah, they're not
you did do that.
From the start, they're not even going to be interacting. That's not, I don't think, a good way to approach it.
Ew, I
maybe Taya's like a mystical love sage, and she can like help. teach them how not to like make everyone around them feel terrible.
She would be that person.
And what they're going to do is just bring in a bunch of love triangles for Bullen and Asami. They're going to have Bullen and Asami be a possibility. They're bringing in the new, like, the character that starts with a V or something for probably 11.
Is Iroh Jr. and Asami still a thing as well?
It better be.
And Iroh will be part of the love triangle, too. It's like, it'll be all these possibilities.
It'll be like a pentagon.
And Korra's cousin. Bullen, you know, it's just going to be a giant love pentagon.
It's going to be a mess.
One of her creepy cousins, like, is obsessed with Mako or something.
Yes. Bullen. I don't know.
Was it Bullen? I don't know. It was one of the guys.
Everyone's shipping What's-Her-Face, and she has a name. I don't remember her name, but yeah. And Bullen. Even though she might be, like, 15. We don't even know.
I feel like I could see them going around trying to, like, if they even see this as a problem, and being like, Korra does, like, the same thing to Mako that Mako did to Asami.
That could be fun. I would like that.
See, that would be great. Or, like, we just need to, or, like, a moment where Mako just, like, gets his butt kicked or just completely humbled, and then he's like, I'm this terrible, I did this, this was terrible, why did I do this?
How they're going to approach Makora is actually really interesting, because they kind of got them together at the end of book one, not intending for there to be...
And they're hanging in the South Pole together.
Yeah,
and it can't all be happy fun times.
Isn't he a cop? Fun. What is he doing down there?
That's another good point.
Yeah, he I don't know.
He's shirking his duties.
Yeah. I assume they're moving around. Like, so I don't know how long they'll be in the South Pole for. And
they're on mystical date time at the festival.
The interesting thing is that they're a couple now, and as is stereotypically brought up, there's not in television plots, there's not many couples together. There's just building to the relationship.
Yes.
There's never any fluff.
Yeah, no fluff. We wanted Kat and fluff at the end.
You get it for like 5 minutes, and then it's like, no, it's all downhill.
You get frustrating Kadang fluff in The Promise.
Yeah, that's a badly written sexist Kadang fluff. Yeah.
Well, I said frustrating.
Yeah, hooray. I don't know. What we're going to get from, what's going to be frustrating is seeing what we're all hoping for from a season 4 of Avatar, the main couple together. We're going to see it but for Makora, who we don't care about. it'll be interesting to see if we build up sympathy for them, because it's hard not to like root for a couple that's happy together.
And it's canon.
Haley, chime in on this. What are you looking forward to with Makora's love?
Honestly. I just want Makora fluff.
I just want them to be happy forever and ever. Right off to the sunset.
I think you'd prefer everyone like fighting in a giant love.
Oh yeah, I want that.
I think you'd want that.
I love how you're telling her what she wants. Good job, Dylan.
The bloodbath.
We know this by now about it.
This is true. This
actually
is true.
I still want Taco. I want Tano and Mako. That's what I want.
Oh, Tano! I forgot about him.
I miss him.
That's
so
another person they should bring back.
I don't know if he's even coming back.
He'd be a good
I don't see... The only reason he would come back is for fan service. Like, there is no relevant reason for him to come
join
back.
Join Team Avatar. It would be great. I'd love
that.
Tano could become a good character. He could be... Because he has a really good point to have a redemption, and then Mako could learn something.
See, where are these fanfics? Get on it, people.
I mean, I'm sure they're there. My favorite fix
are when Asami and Tano are best friends and they go out and, like, shop. Like, those are my favorite.
That's lovely.
I can recommend some fantastic Tenora fanfics.
Oh, no, no one wants Tenora, no.
Everybody should, though. Let's be honest.
Is there a Korra ship I didn't like? I don't even want Bolin with Korra.
I like all the Korra ships.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you ship everyone with Korra.
You do ship.
Yes, I do.
I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. I mean, that way you never get hurt, because she's gonna end up with someone.
What if she ends up sad and alone?
Well, I'm okay with that, to be honest. If she doesn't get some characterization soon.
I don't know. Korra's kind of eh. She doesn't do anything.
She doesn't.
Can I just say, I'm sad about the fact that the Aang in the opening credits is not the Aang we got to see in the TV show. Like, the cool Aang.
Yeah. We need to see the flashbacks.
I want Smexy older Aang. That's really all I want.
Between 40-year-old Aang and 13-year-old Aang.
Well, that's the one who's in the credits. Yeah. It's like 20-year-old Aang.
I'm totally okay with that. I want 20-year-old Aang, please.
Hot, 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 hot.
Yeah, that's the Aang I need.
And then we need some Katara. Why is it... We saw everyone but Katara.
Katara. It's very frustrating.
I mean, there's that picture.
I want to see more older Sokka, just because he's just as good as younger Sokka.
And he's hot.
Eh.
Okay, let's get back on topic. I think we have talked a lot about how to fix Mako, but a lot of this has just been complaining about Mako. But, so I think...
It's not hard to do.
I mean, we had to get it out of our system.
Mako grows, you know, somehow. His character gets better. Korra's character gets better. Maybe seeing them together will be good. It's not like they need to break up. Now that they're already together, just because the relationship started maybe in a bad place, doesn't mean that bad things have to happen. Like,
but you can have some redemption. It's okay. It just came out of a bad place. We have this whole little cheating triangle thing that just wasn't good. I mean, they could still be good together if we just have some growing up and them becoming like kind of know how to talk to people.
Yeah.
Do you think they're gonna stay together for 3 more seasons? They're gonna break up at least once.
No, yeah, they probably are gonna break up.
Yeah, I mean, there's not gonna be a relationship that goes on for years more.
Those two would not be able to stand each other for 3 straight seasons without breaking up at least once.
Yeah, I think they're both too strong at it.
Maybe that's why they're out on the glacier. They actually hate each other and they're fighting and then the spirits show up.
It's like when the spirit turtle comes and tells you what you did wrong, they're on the glacier of time out.
Yes.
I think number one, you have to get them back on the same continent. Bolin, Asami, Mako, and Korra, in order to fix this somehow. You can't just have them operate separately.
Mid-season, unite Team Avatar.
Send hawks? Send a hawk to talk about your feelings.
Here we go.
A letter.
I don't even know how they're going to approach it. That's the... It's like, we're all talking about... We're trying to talk in general. Like, we don't want to mention specific plot things, because really, they kind of had a wide-open slate after this. And like, there's things you could fix from book one, and we're going to do a mini-cast after this about the moral ambiguities of good and evil, and how they didn't really approach that at the end of Korra, is one of the things I want to talk about. And I don't necessarily want them to, if they're not going to do more about the Equalists, they don't need to try to fix the fact that the Equalists always just looked bad. Like, they can move on in a different plot direction, I guess. So, because they're going to do that, they can just do whatever. But, at the same time, Mako is... Unlike the Equalist, Mako will be a constant presence in the show, so
we're stuck with him.
We're stuck with Mako. Something needs to be done.
Unless he dies.
Which I'm kind of okay with.
No, don't say that.
He's a firebender. He's not going to freeze to death.
Zuko almost froze to death. It's possible.
And then he saved himself using firebending. So.
Well, Zuko's like a lot more awesome than Mako is at firebending.
Mako doesn't have Iroh to say, remember your fire breath. Yeah, like, you know. If he was trapped under a big ice thing, it might be game over. This is the type of...
Well, I think if you're trapped under an ice thing, the bigger danger is drowning, not freezing.
Yeah, okay, you don't know which one will happen first. Like, you know,
it's true.
The lack of oxygen. Probably the lack of oxygen.
Lack of oxygen.
That's terrible. Especially because he's a firebender. If he doesn't have any oxygen, oh well.
You guys are so mean.
This actually just went off on how to kill off Mako.
I couldn't help it. I mean, I said that before. I was like, I'd be totally okay with if he just froze to death. I mean...
I know.
I mean, that is one way to end his character arc.
That would just be, it would actually be terrible.
It would. I'd feel bad. If they actually killed Mako, I'd feel bad.
It would be.
I would cry for so long.
I wouldn't cry, I mean.
I would.
Yeah.
Well, we know you would, we know.
excuse yeah. you.
You cried for like 2 seasons because Rose left.
Because that is different. Understand. I cried for like 2 seasons.
Rose is amazing.
Okay, actually, yeah. it was like
okay,
more
okay,
than
we gotta
that.
Move back. We gotta move back. We're gonna fix Mako.
Okay. So yeah, let's wrap things up.
So, how to fix Mako?
Just by doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, we have to kill him.
are there the writers they hire to fix things
they
actually
hire
do
Hitman
their job, or you know they kill him?
I mean, I don't think they hire them to fix things. I don't think Mike and Brian are aware they're not the best writers.
Which is what the problem is. If they were aware, we wouldn't need to fix Mako. Yeah.
Well, if they wouldn't hire writers if they weren't aware that
No, they hired writers because them writing all of book one was too much work. That's why they did that.
Oh.
Lazy.
Yeah. Well, no, not lazy. They did an incredible amount of work on book one. Like,
yes.
They more so than any other show creators, probably for any other show. Like, they wrote every episode and did a larger part in the animation and stuff like that. Yeah.
And after the Mako stuff, we want more writers.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I mean, like, I was very wary of Korra when we just learned that it would be Mac and Brian writing. But I mean, I guess they did a better job than I thought. I don't know. It was pretty predictable.
I thought the show was fantastic. It was just the Mako stuff. It was like, this is actually unbearable to watch.
We're forgetting about the giant plot holes in the finale.
That's true. This is true.
Asami made the show unbearable.
She's the best character.
She's the best character.
It's just like Zutara, and she hates Aang, despite the fact that Aang is perfect in all ways.
Yeah, honestly, all of the airbenders make the show good. Like, those are the best characters in the show.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, let's wrap up. I've been your, I've been your main host, Dylan. Many hosts have been Philip, Delaney, Haley. Mel, co-host, has kind of been here.
call her out, why don't you?
Mel's internet was acting up, and there's a lot of edits. I hope I remember to take all the cursing out and stuff.
I'll leave it in, please.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
We have like 6 audio files from this. What do you guys want to end on?
Dave.
I love Mako's amazing.
Dave.
I hate my life.
You see, Philip, no. How about no?
How about yes? No one understands that, though. It's then on something else.
Mako is amazing.
Post this. It's fun.
No,
it's worth
I like freezing to death.
No.
Hypothermia. Let's end on hypothermia.
Let's end on something before I drop again. How about that?
Hypothermia.
Okay, just say whatever you want. 1, 2, 3.
Dave.
Hypothermia.
Hello, and welcome to a Fire Nation podcast. Today, we're joined by Delaney.
Hello.
And Philip.
Hello.
And my name is Jeff. And this podcast is going to be about the Fire Nation and whether or not they would make a good world government, assuming that they win the war.
Do we mean good as in, yay, they're happy, we love them, they're like a democracy happiness, or do we mean good as in it functions?
We'll discuss all of those. It's going to be fun. I want to give some background as to how we came up with this question, because it's kind of funny. There's this guy who, he's called That Guy with the Glasses, and that's his website, thatguywiththeglasses.com. Name's Doug. He does a number of comedy routines, I guess. One of them is called Nostalgia Critic, if you've heard of that. So what he's done is he's received a lot of requests to do Nostalgia Critic for The Last Airbender, the movie that never actually happened, as you know. And he doesn't want to lambast it without understanding how it was supposed to go and the source material for it. So he needed to watch all 60 episodes of The Last Airbender. But he has no time to do that all in a row. So he decided once every day he'll watch one episode and then he'll vlog his reaction to it. And it's been awesome. Delaney, what do you think of it so far?
It's wonderful, and just to watch it is a wonderful experience to see someone get introduced to it, and then he says really funny things like they're going to the North Pole to learn water breathing from Santa Claus.
Yeah.
That's not what happens. I've missed the show.
and then it's really funny to watch him like because he has no idea what's going to happen next, and he likes that, and he just like, and he then he predicts things, and you're just sitting there so smug. You're like, you have no idea what happens next.
Exactly, yeah, and it's so fun, like, watching him become a fan slowly, and like, by the third or fourth episode, he's like, yeah, count me a fan, this is awesome. And then, like, on cue, he loves every single episode, finds something to love about it, and then on cue, The Great Divide comes up, and he's like, I have a bone to pick with this episode. And I'm like, yes, true fan right there. Didn't like it. And yeah, his powers of prediction are very good. He recently saw the storm. He's watching Blue Spirit tonight. And, he knew right away that Azula was going to be a main character from that flashback. And he also basically guessed the entire ending to season two.
And the whole point of season three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's He's a very good reviewer. So, I wanted to.
I just like to point out, I haven't seen any of this, so I'm just going in completely blind, like I'm sure most of the listeners are.
Philip hasn't seen this. Neither have any of you, maybe. But if any of you have, good on you. If you haven't, get on it. I do want to warn you that he does use some language.
Mainly rating. The later ones.
Yeah, PG-13 rated language. So, be warned. Yeah, so I wanted to rewatch Avatar, and I thought, this would be a good idea. I'll just rewatch every episode along with Nostalgia Critic. It'd be great. But last couple of days, I got impatient, so I just blew like 6 or 8 episodes ahead. So now he's got to catch up.
He's got to catch up. Y'all are in a competition. He has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the day when he's like, yeah, you know what? I love this too much. I'm just going to watch like 3 episodes at once. But then he'd have to record 3 times as long, so maybe he wouldn't want to do that. Probably better at time management than I am. So, that's the backstory. Now, here's where Fire Nation comes in. He was watching, I can't remember, it's like episode 106, 107. And he just made this joke about, well, is the Fire Nation that bad? I mean, maybe they have good healthcare, you know? But,
I remember that, okay.
Yeah, and it got me thinking, well, maybe. Maybe they would turn out to be a good government. We don't know. Or at least we haven't discussed
it. Our nation's the new Canada.
Yeah. So, here we are to discuss it. I have an opinion, but it's not fully fleshed out, so we'll see where this goes. I guess we can just go around the circle and give first thoughts on it. Oh, yeah, let's give first thoughts on it, and then we'll go into the Fire Nation government. So, Delaney, what do you think?
And we should also preface this that we're talking about during Ozai's time.
Yes, yes.
Not wonderful happiness Zuko time.
Yeah, because we know like nothing about what Zuko's been up to with the Fire Nation. We can assume it's better, so we're not going to talk about that. So this is during Ozai, during season 1, 2, 3, and would it be good for the world if he won? Or would it not be overly bad, rather? So, Delaney, what do you think?
Well, by definition of a good, like, for a government to, okay, if we're not going to go by morally good, because they're not morally good, Ozai wants to take over the planet.
Yeah.
So if we're going to go by the true definition of a good government, which is a government that provides for its people, caters to every need, and its people are happy, like, we're talking about, like, they have a good economy, they have, the people are happy, like, they're very content with their country, like, they're getting everything they want, there's not poverty, there's, like, good standard of living, everything like that. Based on that, I would have to say, just from what we've seen of the Fire Nation, because as we go through Avatar, we see everyone else suffering, but not the Fire Nation, which makes sense because they're the conquerors. So it's kind of like with Alexander the Great, where he conquered the world, and then, like, and he made his subjects suffered a bit, but overall, the people were happy because he provided for them. So I'd have to say it's a good functioning government from what we've seen.
Okay, cool. Philip, what do you think?
I would argue the other way. Like, it seems good in the homeland, like in the Fire Nation proper, like the main isles. But in the colonies, it's not that great. Like in, what's the city? The Water City? It's all
Chameleon
on water.
Bay?
No, where it's all, like, on floating on the water.
Oh,
and
the
it's
swamp.
All
oh, the swamp.
With no, this, with the Spirit Lady episode.
The Painted
Spirit.
Lady? Yeah, the Painted Lady. Yeah, that's they're in the swamp.
That's not a swamp, but okay.
Oh, I guess it's not, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, it's like, hey, that's awful, like, where they are. And that factory's just ruining their entire city. And then we see the school where all the students are, and they have, like, no freedom of expression whatsoever. And it sucks for them. Like, we only see it good in the homeland proper. In the colonies, it's not that great at all. So I would say, like, maybe it's good for the original Fire Nation, but for everyone else that they take over, it's not going to be. It's not going to be the same standard as the, you know, the heart of the Fire Nation.
Okay. Cool. I would say that it depends. And let me qualify that. I think, as Delaney does, that it appears that the Fire Nation is doing a good job of taking care of its people at the moment. Like, in the homeland, maybe not so much in the colonies, but in the homeland, where they're in the center of Fire Nation culture, everyone seems happy, and things seem to work well. They got a good industrial revolution going on, and who knows where that'll take them. The question is, will this inner circle, outer colony distinction continue on, like, for the rest of the world's history, once they win? Or let's say they Fire Nation, you know, captured Ba Sing Se and eradicates all the resistance, then do they make everywhere in the world like how it is in the Fire Nation colonies? If that happens, I think it could turn out well, or it could not. You know, it really depends on what Ozai ends up doing with the world once he has it.
I mean, I think it's a big what if, because in the 100
that's part
years,
of, that's the point of this discussion. They're not.
Yeah.
Ozai doesn't win.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they've had 100 years, and it's still not very good in the colonies. So, what makes it seem like it would get any better later? Like, they've had 100 years.
We don't
years
know how long
integrate.
The colonies have been have existed.
Yeah.
What about in the newer comics? You know, the heresy is to talk about them. Like, we see some of the colonies that have been there since almost the beginning, like Yudao, and how the original citizens are still, like, second-class citizens to the Fire Nation.
Hmm.
I mean, that Yudao is said to be, like, one of the oldest colonies, and if it's been that long and they're still not on equal footing, what makes it seem like it's going to get any better?
We see that they've caused... Okay, well, I'm just going to clarify what I said about we don't know how long they've been around. We've seen at this point that maybe they've reached a third generation in the colonies, which this is when this is very similar to the American Revolution. We got around to this third generation. We were like, this is crap. We're done with the British. Let's fight. It's about where we got ish. So, I mean, so that's kind of, I just wanted to clarify how long it's been around, because they wouldn't have colonized immediately, because the big push was to destroy the air nomads, and then it was, so, just wanted to throw that in there.
Mm-hmm. And we also have to take into account that the Fire Nation was very militaristic, and they probably pouring a lot of their national resources into the military instead of social programs that maybe could improve the quality of life in the colonies.
They're definitely, just for sure, militant. It's a jingoism. Is that what jingoism? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've heard that word. I'm not sure what it means. You want to define it?
Yep. Here, give me a minute. I'm just trying to. I'm going to find the actual definition for you, so I don't like. If I can.
I'm also googling this. Jingoism.
Yes,
jingoism. Flag waving, an appeal intended to arouse patriotic emotions. So I'm not sure if that's what you wanted.
I was trying to make a point, and then I lost it. Oh, well. Hmm. Well, that's definitely, you can define the Fire Nation that way. It doesn't relate exactly to what you're talking about, but that is a word we can use later talking about the Fire Nation for sure.
Okay. So they're a jingoist state, is what you'd say?
They're militaristic.
Because jingoism goes in with the militaristic state. It's all about the Fire Nation, that the whole world, the rest of the world's terrible. They need to be like the Fire Nation because we're so awesome. We have to share us with the rest of the world.
It's specifically the same thing that all the Europeans did, saying, "Oh yeah, all the not white people are uncultured, and we're going to share the culture."
But, the white man's burden. That's
taking
exactly,
advantage of them. Yeah, like a Rudyard Kipling, white man's burden. We're going to share the culture by completely like making them subservient and slaves, essentially.
Which they did a very good job of. I think I heard recently either only 6 or somewhere like 20 nations have not been conquered by Europeans at some point.
There's like less than 20 that I think have been conquered by the British alone.
Oh, they have not been.
Well, in the 19th century, in the Berlin Conference, they split up an entire continent.
Yeah, they just said, "Oh, hey, here's Africa. We're gonna draw some imaginary lines and tell everyone who falls in the middle of that line, oh well, sucks to be you."
Hmm. Yeah, it's true. Now, I wonder if something similar could happen with the Fire Nation. Although this world does seem quite a bit smaller. And there's not many land masses, so
we only have we have four powers, and really we only have three because one was completely annihilated. Mm-hmm. And then
we're
assuming
that there will then be just one.
Yeah, there's also a lot less, you know, control because with the Berlin Conference, it was a lot of different powers like dividing things up. If it's just one conquering power, there's a lot, you know, there's no one to fight for it.
So it's really like Alexander the Great when he took over. I mean. A greater portion of the world than any other single person.
Genghis Khan.
Yep, Genghis Khan also. Yeah. His empire was larger than Alexander the Great's.
And didn't have exactly fantastic quality of life, so.
Right. Now, was that because he never achieved, like, the extent that he wanted to, and so he kept putting more and more resources into his expansion effort?
I mean, it was from what I remember, it was decent, but it was still kind of a strong military presence on get bigger, get bigger, get bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Though people did adore Genghis Khan the way that people came to adore Alexander the Great. Though you have the two sides of the coin. You have this great conqueror who, I mean, he conquers you and it's like, oh my God, what are you doing? And then there's the other side. He's brought peace and one ruler. So that ties in as well.
Now this sort of transitions into something else I wanted to talk about that will help us in our discussion. That's I want to try and classify the Fire Nation as a government type, as far as what we've seen so far. So I have pulled up here, we all do, this Wikipedia page on government. And under, let's see, it's categorizing certain government types by attributes. And so I'm reading...
It seems like they... easiest definition would just be an absolute monarchy because it's a monarchy, a single monarchy that's has absolute power.
You would think, yeah, and I was looking for monarchy or something, but then I thought, well, isn't the Earth Kingdom more like a monarchy? They have the king.
But then at the same time, we have the king of Amashu, and then it's like, what? Because the Earth Kingdom really makes no sense.
Yeah, we also don't know how inheritance succession works for any other nation besides the Fire Nation.
Yeah. So there's four... government types I want to read up the summaries of under autocratic attributes. And we can discuss how well the Fire Nation matches these. First, there's autocracy. Rule by one individual whose decisions are subject to neither external legal restraints nor regulated mechanisms of popular control, except perhaps for implicit threat. Autocrat needs servants while despot needs slaves. That seems to fit. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, that's what we're going to get into. It's going to get really confusing because really a lot of these overlap each other.
That's
because
true.
A ruler doesn't go out and is like, I'm going to be this. I'm going to stick to all of this, and this is how evil I'm going to be, and this is it. Mm-hmm. And then, there's also a lot of blurred lines. Like, have you heard of enlightened despots?
I have not.
Yeah.
Like, well, there's Catherine. During the 19th century in Europe, specifically 1848, pretty much the entirety of Europe rises in revolt after this period and people were getting nervous. This is when aristocracy starts to break down because they're getting tired of it. And then we have these rulers who are trying to be, they're trying to be better. This is during the time of the Enlightenment and they're trying to be better people. So they're enlightened despots like Catherine the Great. She's still the Tsarina of Russia. But she frees she abolishes serfdom. So you have these two sides. She's still a ruler. So she's like giving them what they want, but then at the same time still holding the reins of power. Mm-hmm. So we still have absolute control in one person, which as Americans we are taught that this is wrong, that everyone deserves a piece of the pie. While at the same time, these people are somewhat happy.
Yeah, they have absolute power, but they do good stuff with it, essentially.
So.
Yeah.
There are a few other enlightened despots, but Catherine the Great's like the big one because she abolishes serfdom in Russia.
That's a good example. And so what would how would Ozai fit into that model? Would maybe providing universal education be something good that he does?
That is, yep. Well, it's, you know, it seems to be universal compulsory education, even in the colonies.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Enforced by the.
Though we don't know about the state of mandatory education in the other nations as well.
That's true. We don't see
like
any
the,
other.
The states. Air nomads could have had it, and it seems like the Northern Water Tribe had it.
Not book learning type,
but they had like mandatory like healing and combat.
Well, see, I'm not sure it was mandatory. Maybe it was like culturally like
obligated.
Obligated, but I mean,
yeah.
Maybe yeah, there's a lot of stuff we don't know, so yeah, it's just kind of.
Sure.
But we do see in the Fire Nation the whole where they're like, "You're a truant. Yeah. We have to take you to class, kid."
Yeah. Personally, out of these four, the other ones are despotism and dictatorship and fascism. I think fascism matches the Fire Nation the best. It says it focuses heavily on patriotism and national identity. Leader has the power to make things illegal that do not relate to nationalism. Believe that their nation is based on a commitment to an organic national community where its citizens are united together as one through a national identity. It exalts nation and race above the individual and stands for severe economic and social regimentation and forcible suppression of opposition. And it's heavily militaristic. So, that, I mean, I think that just fits.
Yeah, that fits, aside from the race part, because we don't really see any race relations, but as far as national identity, I mean, it fits pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the race thing, that's an interesting question. Because, I mean, they have this natural race segregation. Yeah, you know, Fire Nation, Earth Kingdom, and Water Tribe, and Air Nomads, they all look different. And that's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they do think, I mean, they say the Fire Nation, which, and they do mean collectively, because as a people, they think they are better, which is why they have to inflict themselves upon the world. So that does tie into, it exalts the Fire Nation people. Firebenders are the best, the people of the Fire Nation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I was trying to read up on, like, what happened to different fascist governments throughout the world. Obviously, I mean, as far as I've been able to tell, there have been none successful governments that have been fascist. They all filed at some point. But I'm not sure whether it's due to the influence or interference by other governments or just because they self-imploded. Because assuming the Fire Nation takes over the world, they are the only government. And so if they're fascist, will that hinder them or will it just be the way it is? What do you guys think?
Well, these kinds of governments where it's a, and this is really what we see in the Fire Nation, it's a cult of personality, just like in Nazi Germany. We have this one leader who they're given godlike status. And they're, I mean, granted, it doesn't seem quite as severe in the Fire Nation as much as it is the Fire Lord and not necessarily the individual Fire Lord.
That's right, because when Zuko became Fire Lord, there was no, like, revolt. Well, it wasn't major revolt, but.
Yeah. So it's slightly different, but it's inherent in all governments from what we've seen just through history that when you have one person in power, I mean, and when they reach success, it's the people around them who get jealous, and then because you know you have to, it's a very common political cartoon. You're climbing a ladder, and you're stabbing the people in the back as you climb yourself up the ladder.
Hmm.
So we also don't know how that works
because we know there's other noble, like nobility in the Fire Nation, but we don't know if there's like other, like, you know, if say all of Zuko's family was to die off, does another family take the
succession?
Yeah, we don't know about like which, you know, is there another noble family that has the next succession?
I imagine in that case, the Fire Sages would break out their genealogical records and find who's next.
That is a good point.
But that's interesting, the backstabbing aspect, because I just watched 201, the Avatar State, today, and when Azula came by to meet Zuko, he said, like, oh, there's been whisperings of plots against our father. He wants you back with him. And Zuko just takes that in stride. You know, he wants you back. Maybe it's just because he was in shock, but if that is a good cover story, then that lends credence to the fact that there could be plots against
If you know if someone wants to kill, you know, the Fire Lord, it's just, oh well, you know, par for the course.
Yeah, is that then, I mean, because it doesn't seem like they're like, what? No, that's out of the question. You must be joking. So.
Well, just, and it's another thing is because it's a dynasty that we see that a lot. I mean, Azula wants the throne. She tries to kill Zuko. It just happens. People are like, I want power. Cleopatra did it.
Yeah. And Farlo knows
just
that
kill is. Everybody. And then just when it's one person and not complete power, that's when we start things. Because human nature is flawed, so inherently anything we create is flawed. So,
where does that leave us?
We kind of agreed that it's fascism.
I suppose. I mean, like Tony said, there's a lot of blurred lines, but I feel like that's the essence of how they've been.
Oh, if we're going to go textbook, it's textbook fascism.
Okay, cool. Fascist government. So, now, I wonder what would be the consequence of, transitioning the Fire Nation to be a world government. Because so far they've been operating out of these volcanic islands, while the vast majority of the rest of the world has been just fighting their military. But once the Fire Nation asserts itself worldwide, they're going to have to put out different centers of government and somehow make it all work. How well do you think
that
would work?
It seems like they would definitely have to move their capital, because being stuck on the far western edge of the known world isn't convenient for ruling everybody else, really.
But at the same time, they've waged war from this tiny section of islands, and they've been almost completely unopposed. In 100 years, they've been fighting, but the Fire Nation's been clearly winning the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, as far as, like, being able to govern effectively, just because they're so far away, is like, as far as, communicating effectively and stuff, it would
be think about this.
To move
is
to
the United States area. Capital centrally located?
No, but we also have instant communication. They still rely on hawks that fly around and rely, pass messages.
Well, that's not, no, when our capital was established, we were barely on the Pony Express.
Yeah, but when our capital was created, it was roughly in the middle.
But we knew
that
we were
going to... As far as, like,
the
original colonies go.
But we knew we were going to stretch west. That was always been part of American philosophy.
Manifest destiny. Yeah, I don't know. So, I suppose that's true. It seems like
it's just something to think about.
Yeah,
I think Philip's got a point. Like, if at the time they were pretty centrally located, I mean, maybe they could have extended west, but that couldn't have had any effect on where they put their center of government.
Well, it had been considered in United States history moving the capital. They considered it very much, and there was a lot of discussion. But it was never moved.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, I mean, I could see the far. I would think logically you'd move the capital, but and logically if you were
whether
to move
or not
the capital, you'd move it to Ba Sing Se.
Yeah,
I think Ba Sing Se.
I mean, it's a logical conclusion whether or not they'd actually do it, just in the sense of, oh, well, it's the Fire Nation, we shouldn't have to move, and, we've been here for a while.
We're in the middle of a volcano, who's going to attack us?
Yeah.
I feel like it's possible they could divide their government into two sections or multiple and have it be tiered.
Well, that didn't exactly work out well for Rome, so.
Did it not?
Well, Rome split up and then they kind of fell apart.
Hmm.
Well, granted, they were two separate empires. They didn't really operate as the same thing. They split, and so that's a tad different.
And I do imagine that if they did try and establish a world government, the majority of the world is not Fire Nation. So once you have this world government, you're going to be like diluting your
They have
base.
To maintain it.
Yeah, they have to maintain
yeah.
it. And you're not going to have.
I mean, the Earth Kingdom
anymore.
Is massive on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could fit everything else in the Earth Kingdom. I mean, it's expansive for sure.
So, how well could the Fire Nation government really keep control of these Earth Kingdom citizens who now have no nation?
They couldn't, and also there's another thing where we see Aang traveling. I mean, there aren't roads to these places. It's just they're the isolated places on bodies of water or certain spots of resources where they survive that they survive off of.
It's also they have the airships, but aside from the airships, it's quite hard to cross north to south or east to west because the Siwang Desert is pretty much in the heart of the Earth Kingdom, and it is a very large, very expansive desert that's not easy to cross.
And we see no evidence of Rhodes, like, running except in the Earth Kingdom, except for, like, in a few very small instances.
Yeah, the in Omashu, and going through the secret tunnel and all, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Like, we so just don't have, like, there's a network of roads. Like, they'd have to build their own.
Which I could see them doing. I mean, that could be the next big project.
I mean, there are definitely parallels to Rome and, you know, any great empire trying to assert itself where you have to build all these roads.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine, in the meantime, that there would be plenty of little villages who really just wouldn't care. I mean, like, oh no, the Fire Nation won, but it doesn't really actually have any impact on them until maybe the Fire Nation has this cultural expansion program to have everyone's going to be Fire Nation. We're going to throw down all your old buildings and make new ones.
And really, which it's confusing anyway because it's the Earth Kingdom, we just don't know. And if they go from one king to a Fire Lord, what does it really matter? It's not like Quay did anything to begin with.
Hmm.
Yep. It's like, we're just under new management. Oh, well.
And it's kind of a common theme in, like, medieval stuff. It's like, well, there's a new leader, but it's all the same thing, really. Big deal. Keep doing what you're doing. Yep.
Which may, and the Earth Kingdom is so massive. Which may contribute to how the Dai Li just moved so easily to Azula. Yeah. It's not like they had any national identity from their Earth Kingdom.
Exactly. And the Earth Kingdom is so massive, and everything we see is rural, aside from two cities. We see Ba Sing Se and Omashu. Mm-hmm. So people are just spread out everywhere doing their thing.
Yeah, everything else we see, like Haru's village and Plains village, are all just, you know, small communities, farming communities, more or less.
Which is why it was so easy for the Fire Nation to occupy them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then attacking Ba Sing Se is hard. I mean, this is the second siege of Ba Sing Se that we watch.
It's true.
And the first one failed, so...
Mm-hmm. Now here's a question. Would the Fire Nation be likely to initiate a genocide purge on Earthbenders?
Well, think about Ozai. I was really just thinking about that.
The only reason they did the purge on the Airbenders was to get rid of the... the Avatar, so that the Avatar wouldn't reborn. It doesn't seem like they have such an intense hate for the others. Like, no, we don't want any Earthbenders. We're going to kill them all.
Well, I just want to end the cycle. It seems like a very Ozai thing to do.
Well, and they had the option when they started taking colonies, and they didn't.
Well, that's just it, though. When you think about it, like, Ozai, the final episode, what is Ozai doing? They're on a bunch of airships, and they're just burning. Like, they don't even look at what they're doing. They're just burning. And I was just thinking about that a few minutes ago. I'm like, really? Do they want to control these people, or do they just want to the Phoenix rise from the ashes? He's destroying the world to create his little Fire Nation world. Mm-hmm.
Reminded me a lot of what Sherman did. He just burned a path through Georgia and said, "Hey, President Lincoln, here, have Savannah, Merry Christmas." So it's just, you know, don't care what's in the way, just burn your way through it until you get to where you want to be. For Sherman, it was Savannah. For Ozai, it's Ba Sing Se.
Yep. But then, he didn't need to go to Ba Sing Se. Ba Sing Se had already fallen. This was like the final attack. He was going to destroy the Earth. Is that what he said specifically? We're going to, this is the end of the Earth Kingdom? I don't think he necessarily meant that ruling-wise. I think he might have really...
I don't think he meant to, like... destroy the entire thing. That's obviously a little expansive for a short comment. He just wanted to, like, make such an impression that it was obvious what was up, I think.
But the Ba Sing Se had already fallen. War had essentially ended already, and then we're already fighting months, and we're still going for months. Like, the war had ended. Aang said
Zuko knew. But remember what Zuko's words were in the war room. He said, his father asked him, "Do you think that the Earth... people will accept our rule?" He's like, "No, they're way too stubborn. They will never give up as long as they have hope." And then it's like, okay, we'll destroy their hope. Which, I don't know how well that would have worked. Because still, to this day, that ending sort of annoys me. Because there is no way that he could have done a whole lot in the
Think about Hitler. I mean, he destroyed millions. And he never really could have succeeded in what he was doing. But he tried it anyway. And he accomplished... such atrocities. What Ozai did. He destroyed an entire race.
Well, the whole trying to destroy the opponent's hope has historically never worked. Like, look at the London Blitz. They drop bombs, like, every night for a long period of time over London and the English countryside and didn't care. War is normal. Keep calm, carry on. Mm. It just, it doesn't work. It's not an effective warfare tactic. It wouldn't have worked any better for Oza.
Okay.
Well, but it didn't matter. Like it didn't need to be effective because he already had kind of won. Does that make sense? Like, I mean, yeah, he had,
The Earth Kingdom is so spread out, though.
He could have just been putting down pockets. He is. It is so spread out. But all he would have had to deal with, he could have just said he was ruling them. It didn't matter. He was happy. All he would have been dealing is with a small pockets of fighters like the Freedom Fighters. He'd just been like, eh, it's like brushing off a gnat. I mean, I really don't think it would have been like a huge, massive movement because it's so spread out. Like, it wouldn't have mattered either way.
It seems like for Ozai, he needs to have that certainty that he controls everything. Just saying, I control it isn't the same as that absolute knowledge that every town in this country follows your word.
Well, I think he would have just burned them all down. That's what he was doing until Aang stopped him. He was just burning the entire country.
That's true.
I'm of two minds on this. On the one hand, I think in the context of this discussion, we're assuming that he has won. Now, like, I guess we didn't actually precisely define what it means to win for Ozai.
Yeah.
But, and so then...
It's kind of like Amon. He has a plan, but we don't really know, like, the entirety of his plan other than world domination.
Using the comet, it's not feasible for him to burn the entire Earth Kingdom. It just doesn't last long enough. He wouldn't have gotten across there, like, any significant fraction of the Earth Kingdom.
But then what was the point of his plan? He said he was going to use the comet to end the Earth Kingdom. I think that was actually word for word what he said.
I think, and here's my theory, and it doesn't work in world because I think Philip's right that if we take airspeed velocity and time like literally, it wouldn't have done anything. But I think we just need to accept that it would have dealt a deadly blow if he had succeeded somehow. Don't know how. Yeah. Like maybe
he had some intent that we don't know about that was gonna just completely cripple him.
Well, I think.
Well, otherwise, would Aang and them stopped him? I mean, why, if there wasn't so much at stake, why wouldn't they have like tried so hard? They had to defeat him. They had to stop this in the middle of it. They had to.
I think here's my
We have to assume it was the end.
I think the writers have a dilemma. In order for the air mission to succeed for the Fire Nation to actually do the damage they want to do, it would have to be at least 10 times that size and spread out over multiple locations.
And they've got less than a dozen ships all right next to each other, just going through one little swath of forest.
So if they're going to,
we have to remember all we were seeing is Ozai's contingent. We weren't seeing like anything else.
Well, that's the thing.
So we have to assume there were others out there.
Well, see, if there were others, then it doesn't matter if Ozai's taken out because they have done their damage.
This is true.
So I think the writers just were in a pickle.
And we never see any fallout as if there were others out there.
Yeah. So if the writers were going to be true to the physics and time and whatever, then they couldn't have had Aang win the way he did. But they had to because it's a kid's show and it needs a finale conclusion. So we got what we got. And we have to accept that were Ozai to succeed, somehow it would have been bad for everyone else in a major way.
Yeah.
The spirit of the Earth Kingdom was in that forest. We just don't know it.
Yeah. Yeah, the big badger moles. There's where they're going. They're going to burn out the badger moles. So we've been talking about the Earthbenders. So far, in the last couple minutes, we've been talking about how Ozai would have actually overcome resistance to win. But I think, since we're assuming he's won, let's adapt this. It seems like there would be a major guerrilla warfare. Once he's won.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he did all the easy stuff. Okay, we're going to pretend taking out the air nomads was easy, but if we're going to be fair, they were all up in the air. And then he took out the water tribes. The southern water tribe was destroyed, like, just right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And then the northern water tribe. Without murdering them all. He just took their benders.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the northern water tribe, there's this epic war and the capital is destroyed.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem like they were on a mission.
Aang saved
it would have been destroyed if Aang hadn't saved them.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're considerably weak. I mean, even though they're a big city and, I mean, they're huge in position in the Southern Water Tribe, they don't have nearly the population the Earth Kingdom does. Mm-hmm. Or that we're thinking they do because they have such a big land mass and we just haven't seen everybody.
Yep.
So
yeah, I mean, presumably there are more than the half dozen towns we've seen in the Earth Kingdom.
Yeah, and really, the Earth Kingdom's the more immediate threat because we have these two places at the poles. What are they gonna do? I mean, they'd have to travel by sea. They have no other way of traveling.
And they're opportune targets. Like the Earth Kingdom, you know, you just keep hammering at it, and like from all the angles, but the North and South Poles, there is one place where you can send big armada to guarantee to do some damage.
Yeah, I mean, on each pole, there's one city. That's all you've got to deal with.
Mm-hmm. They're on a big glacier. Like, there's only so much you can do
yeah.
to defend from a glacier. I mean, you can attack the glacier all you want.
They're completely walled in. There's nowhere for them to go, and the Fire Nation could get on top and drop in on them. It's not a very defensible position, the Northern Water Tribe.
Yeah.
So if we're assuming that Ozai won, and we're just completely ignoring the fact that Aang did anything, well then the Northern Water Tribe, if he went back or if Aang hadn't been there at all, the Northern Water Tribe would have fallen in a matter of days.
Yeah.
Well, especially with what Xiao did, then the Water Tribe has just gone immediately.
Mm-hmm. And Benders too. There would have been no more Water Benders.
Yeah. Of course, there's long-lasting effects from that, apparently, but we don't see what that would have been, so it's probably irrelevant.
Oh,
yeah.
And then they actually kind of would have been stuck there, because if the moon's gone, there are no tides, so they couldn't have left.
They have steamships, they'd be fine.
Actually,
oh, the steamships is true.
Yeah, that's a good point. Tides.
If anything, that's an advantage, because then the Earth Kingdom, well, they still have wind, so as long as you got sails, you're fine.
Well, you still kind of need the ocean moving you, too.
I think without the moon and the tides, I think the Fire Nation would be all right. But
the Fire Nation, the Earth Kingdom would have been kind of like, eh.
Yeah, they would have been kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
But here's my thought. Xiao went after the spirits, right? He's going to destroy them. And he had no care for the consequences. Now, if that is sort of indicative of what kind of leaders the Fire Nation has, assuming they've won, I think it's a good bet they would not be very caring towards their spirits of the earth, and they would just start, doing harm to themselves by just going after the spirits willy-nilly.
This is true.
Though, also, it's the water tribes the only ones who are vulnerable to that, because there is no earthbending spirit incarnate for the...
They just have animals.
They have the animals they learn from, but killing the badger moles doesn't make people not be able to earthbend, because the earthbending spirit... or whatever that is, doesn't have a physical form.
Yeah. I think the Water Nation is the only one who are directly vulnerable to those spirits.
Yes.
But I think that, like was said before...
There definitely is some bad karma going around.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are likely to be consequences, but we don't know what those would even come close to being.
I'm willing to bet that the world would probably fall apart under the Fire Nation leadership, from a spiritual perspective.
Yeah, they seem to have almost a complete disregard for that.
Yeah. So, interesting. So I hadn't considered that spiritual aspect of their rule. So that's interesting. Now, I don't have any more thoughts.
What about, we haven't really talked about what they would provide, as far as...
Like services, yeah.
Well, yeah, about, there's... Obviously, the standardized education. It seems like there'd be a great leap forward in technology.
Yeah, yeah.
If they spread their technology,
industrial revolution going on. No one else has that. Yeah, I think we'll have some. Some definitely leaps forward there. Healthcare. I think there might be some. Because that's what Nostalgic Critic brought up.
I mean, they've gotten rid of the waterbenders, so that healing
that's
is out
shame.
There.
Yeah.
So really all they'd have is herbalists.
Well, let's adjust our hypothetical, because I want to allow for the possibility of there being other benders in the world.
Okay.
If there's not, then we know there's going to be consequences and things.
So really, the Fire Nation, they have two options. They can either go like mad crazy, we're going to destroy everybody, or we're just going to kind of live in harmony where we're just in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine they'll try and imprint their national identity on everyone.
Oh, definitely, because everything is the Fire Nation. We're superior.
Yeah,
so
there's never going to become a Yeah, I don't think there's ever going to become a point where, like, someone from the Earth Kingdom would be the Phoenix King. That's just not ever going to happen.
No. And I imagine they would, an Earthbender would always be a second-rate citizen to a Firebender.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, if you're, this is kind of like the Spanish Empire, where we have this set rank. We have Pincelares, we have people who were born in the Americas who are of both Spanish and noble birth, but they're still not as important as Pincelares, who came from Spain.
Yeah.
So we could come into that set class, and then like even more, like if your mother was an earthbender and your father was a firebender, you're a third-rate citizen. Because yeah, even though you have a bit of firebender in you, there's still that earthbender in you.
Yeah.
So kind of going into like where you have mestizos, and I could see them doing that. That'd be a very Fire Nation thing to do.
And that would probably be self-defeating, because you know you've got a whole bunch of earthbenders who are like disgusted with the government, and they're all together, and they're going to rise up and go all America. Yep. I think if they were going to mitigate that, you'd want to keep the density of earthbenders or the ratio of earthbenders to firebenders very low anywhere you are.
Yes.
But I don't think they can do that. There's just too many earthbenders.
Well, it's what the Spanish Empire, that's what the Spanish Empire had problems with when they came into South America, and they were like, I mean, the native population was huge, and of course they wiped them out with disease. Granted, that's not going to happen necessarily because we haven't seen that.
Yeah, they essentially just got lucky.
Yeah, we didn't see that. And of course, there hasn't really been any like genetic differences as we can see, other than appearance within the Avatar world, where there would be times of not being immune to something. And we just haven't seen that much sickness that's caused by what we would call a bacterium, as opposed, like, we see people sick in the in the Painted Lady village, but that's from drinking the water and they're not being food.
Yeah.
Or the food's tainted. Yeah. As well. Like, we don't see any natural sickness. Them being
sick when Aang has to go get the herbalist and gets caught, but that's something that's like an illness they've caught. It's not some kind of
that's
weird.
It's like a cold. It's not like a.
I imagine
it's not like a pestilence.
I imagine that the Fire Nation culture would give rise to the sort of scientific thinking that could bring on, you know, like vaccines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then bioweapons on that same note.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see
that. I mean, it seems like the Fire Nation is kind of big on stuff being in order, so it seems like that would be a society that's big on, like, cleanliness and making sure that, you know, the kind of environment that would breed disease doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah, because it's a disgrace against your nation if you're all messy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unless you're, like,
and Fire Nation people, they're very clean cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They take pride in their appearance, which is why it's such a big deal, I think, with Zuko and the scar. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, he couldn't, you know, be as Fire Nation-y as he hoped.
Yes.
Well, okay, so anything else that they could provide? I think they will definitely do that road-building project.
Well, they'd definitely be spreading industrialization. I mean, it'd be spread just like it was when it went from England, came to the United States, and then I feel like the industrial centers would move to where the resources were, but the government would remain where it is. But the centers of industrialization would be spread out throughout the Earth Kingdom where the resources were.
Yeah. And they could have it's crazy. I mean, the Earth Kingdom, the Fire Nation, they don't even have to lay down track. They've already got a cross-terrain train.
It's
so
true.
Need to master those, and then you've got your network.
Yep.
Which would increase economy. That would also probably help with disease prevention, because you know, you spread immunity around.
Oh, a thought. Like Alexander the Great, he which is what led to his downfall later, or like the breakup of his empire. Alexander the Great was the big ruler, but he had like viceroys spread out in his different areas, like they were all in charge of a little area. I feel like that's what would happen in the Earth Kingdom. We'd have these
kind of subdivided. The same way it is in most countries, where it's divided into states or provinces or counties and so on. You just have like lower levels of, you know, authority until it gets down to manageable levels.
Yep.
Now with those intermediate levels, you've got a Fire Nation official, obviously, and the Fire Nation breeds ambition and, you know, aggressiveness. So
I mean, we already know there's the Fire Nation nobility, so it seems only logical that the nobility would be the rulers appointed to the, you know, subdivided nations.
Yeah,
and then we'd probably have a revolt against the Fire Lord.
I mean, with nobility comes this infighting and this jockeying, which may not at first, you know, come out like all out against, Fire Lord. But they could, you know, be trying to agglomerate as much power as they could.
Going back to what I said in, like, the very, very beginning about the perfect government, like, how a government, like, how it's supposed to function, such a government doesn't actually exist because there's always going to be unrest.
Yeah. Government can be as perfect as you want, but the people in it, not so much.
Yep.
Yeah, there's no country where everyone is happy with their government. It just is not there.
You can just
whether
say,
or not that turns into open revolt is a completely different thing. True. But there's never going to be a country where everyone's happy.
Because it's a utopia. Unless, utopias do not exist.
Unless you've got
unfortunately
of the Dai Li everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone is Judy.
Mm-hmm, Equilibrium. Have you seen that movie? Just give you happy pills.
Really?
Oh, it's like you take these capsules and like you don't feel love, so therefore you don't feel pain and like you have no emotions.
So they let Buddha take control of the government.
So that's really the only way to have perfect government. You have to alter people's brain chemistry.
I don't see that happening. So overall, like so far, I've changed my mind a little bit. I think that we'd have a bit of an unstable world government with a Fire Nation in charge.
Very true. Well, it'd be unstable even if the Earth Kingdom took over because you have one people subjugating another.
Yeah, although with the Earth Kingdom model, it doesn't seem like they're trying to gather everyone under one ruler. They've got tribute governments.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like Omashu has anything to do with Ba Sing Se, although maybe they have some sort of tribute they deliver. I don't know.
There's no telling.
Yeah.
Maybe there's really two Earth Kingdoms and we just don't know.
Yeah. I imagine they sort of have a system worked out where the resources go to where they're needed.
Yeah.
And if there's a civil war, I'm putting my money on Boone. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I would say he could take Kuei in a fight.
This is what it is. It's the White Lotus. They're going to take over, and everybody's just going to be happy.
They already have taken over. You just don't know it yet because they're doing it so well.
Exactly. Look, we even have conspiracies in Avatar.
Yeah.
There was no moon landing.
No. Okay, so does anyone have anything else they'd like to discuss while we're on the subject of the Fire Nation government?
I think we've pretty well covered it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like good. So, I mean, let's just go around the room one more time. Delaney, what do you think now that we've had this discussion?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I've necessarily changed my mind, but I've been like, we've gotten into some discussion that gets you thinking. I mean, the Fire Nation, what we knew all along, I mean, it's an evil empire that want to take over the world, and I mean, it's just like Nazi Germany and Stalin, it's just, they just want to take over, and whenever you have such motives, and they just, because we like to think evil is never going to win, and as we've seen in history, it wins for a little bit, and then they lose. So when you have something fighting the flow with Aang and them or any other nation fighting against the Fire Nation, they'd never really, it wouldn't be very successful. And they also seem to have a very small population. I mean, they live on an island chain. They can't have that many people.
Very true. So, what do you think?
I think they would manage, they could effectively manage it, but I don't think they could make everyone be happy. I don't think it would remain a consistent nation. I think it just would revolt or something would happen and they wouldn't stay together.
They could get in trouble. I think they could definitely, like, I mean, they very nearly succeeded in conquering. It took 100 years, but they got pretty close to taking over the whole world. So, I mean,
they have this sort of authoritarianship in place that is, you know, kind of effective for ruling that much, but there'd be too much unrest. And I don't think they would provide enough benefits that the people would be happy enough to let it.
Well, what helps is that the Fire Nation people are not in opposition for the most part to what's going on. They're allowing it so you don't have any infighting, really, other than, like, you want someone to, else wants to be the Fire Lord.
There's no infighting, but all the people who are being conquered aren't quite so happy about that.
So, I mean, there's no question that they could have taken control. If Aang hadn't been there, they would have won. It just, the logistics of keeping an empire running, the Rome fell, and Rome was quite arguably the most successful empire ever, aside from maybe the Egyptian empire, and the Egyptians ruled for millennia, so.
With an iron fist of slavery.
What?
I was saying, like, the Egyptians ruled, like, with through slavery, didn't they?
Yeah. Yes. And, of course, they also were inbred, so that's also a factor of why they fell apart.
Mm.
So we don't seem to see that with the Fire Nation. That's a good thing. They have insanity in their line, definitely, but I don't necessarily know if it's from inbreeding.
Yeah.
That seems like something a bit, you know, intense for Nicholas to get into.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, my thoughts on this, I feel, going into this, I felt like if the current Fire Nation government, as we see it, is Ozai's template for the world, I think they could, I thought that would be good, that they'd operate just fine. On the other hand, if Ozai was just letting them be that way because he hadn't gotten around to putting into place any measures he wanted to, that he would do once he won, well, then all bets are off. You know, might be much, much worse. After this discussion, it seems like whether or not Ozai wanted to get anything done, he would have had a really hard time keeping things in line and avoiding any civil unrest.
So winning is easy, but maintaining control is not.
Yeah. Now, it also, let's assume that everything goes well for Ozai. I think that he might even, he doesn't seem like the kind of person to not do, who would not take actions that would, you know, undermine his rule. Like, what I mean is, this forced genocide of Earthbenders. You know, like let's say he decides, okay, we're gonna go do this.
I mean, it seems like Ozai would be much more effective. Like, we don't really see anyone who doesn't like Ozai, aside from, you know, Aang and, you know, the people he's fighting and everything. Like, we don't see anyone in the Fire Nation who's afraid, who, like, you know, hates Ozai, like we see with Azula.
I think
like, all the servants hate Azula. It might be like in Nazi Germany, where we have these people, they feared something happening to them. I wouldn't put the Fire Nation above having a secret police in the Fire Nation.
Hmm.
We just don't see it, but it could be there.
Well,
but that seems
point,
much more like, you know, Ozai doesn't seem that paranoid. He seems confident enough in his own rule that he wouldn't do that kind of thing.
To me, he seems like the kind of ruler who would do something, even though he knows it's going to lead to war. He does it anyway because he loves war so much. You know?
Well, I mean, he has history to back him up. Sozin, I mean, his grandfather was like, let's do this.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, that's another thing, going back to the Fire Nation pride thing. We're the Fire Nation. We can do whatever we want. I'm the Fire Lord. I can do whatever I want.
And he'd have so much confidence because he has
yeah.
he has a whole army, he has a nation who's done whatever he needs it to do.
And it's not so, like the Fire Nation has been suffering. The Fire Nation, like, as Philip was saying, like, the core of the Fire Nation, they're very prosperous right now. They're getting all the resources from all the places they've conquered. I mean, they're thriving. Why would they be mad at Ozai?
Mm-hmm. So I can see Ozai overstepping his bounds, you know. Undertaking some undertaking that he wants to do because he wants to stir things up and cause trouble, or just make things more what he wants, even though he knows it's going to lead to war, and then he does, and then he loses because miscalculated or something has, you know.
Kind of like a Praetorian Guard thing.
How do you mean?
Like the people, they get tired, you know, like, he's reaching too much. Like, that happened in Rome on several occasions. The emperor's reaching too much. We kill him. We put in a new emperor who's a puppet emperor. And we're just going to tell him what to do because we're the Praetorian Guard and we can kill him whenever we want and replace him.
I could see that happening. Yep.
After the five good emperors, that's essentially Roman history. Like, they just, oh, new emperor, let's kill him. New emperor, let's kill him.
Fire sages.
Yep.
That's what they are.
There we go.
Well, good discussion, everyone. Learned a lot.
That was quite the long cast.
Yeah,
it was. Our mini cast.
Coming up on an hour. Well, I've been your host, Jeff, and we've had Delaney and Philip with us. So, what are we to end on?
Fine. Honor.
Fascism.
Honor.
Fascism.
Honor.
It's okay. Not even relevant to the discussion.
What?
How can we talk about Fire Nation and not end on honor?
Okay.
I think Delaney's got a point. Okay. 3, 2, 1,
a valid
honor.
Point.
Honor.
Honor.